Welcome to the deep dive. You're here because you want to get your head around those big economic ideas governments grapple with, and you want the essentials fast.
Yeah.
Think of this as like your shortcut to understanding the main macroeconomic goals and why they actually matter day to day.
Exactly. And you shared that document, Macroeconomic Aims of Government Detailed Revision Notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really solid overview.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today is basically to pull out the key stuff. What are governments trying to do with the economy? Why should you care? And, you know, what are the tricky bits, the trade-offs involved?
Okay, let's jump in. First up, economic growth. So simplest terms, that's the economy making more. More stuff, goods and services.
Yep, that's the core idea. The notes make a good distinction, though, between actual growth and potential growth.
Right, actual versus potential. What's the practical difference there?
Well, think of actual growth like maybe using resources that were just sitting idle. Factory starting up again, more people getting hired. You're using the capacity you already have.
Okay. Making the most of now.
Yeah. Potential growth, on the other hand, is about increasing that fundamental capacity. It's like upgrading the whole system with new tech, better roads, maybe a more skilled workforce. It's about expanding what the economy could produce in the future.
Got it. So actual is using what we've got. Potential is building more capacity for later. And how does this actually hit home for listeners? The notes mentioned benefits.
Oh, absolutely. The big one is usually higher living standards. I mean, sustainable growth generally means more income per person,
mm-hmm.
right? Better quality of life, more opportunities, plus usually means more jobs, which is obviously crucial for financial security.
And public services, too.
Yeah, exactly. A growing economy typically means more tax revenue coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows governments to, you know, hopefully invest more in things like healthcare, education, stuff we all rely on.
Makes sense. A bigger pie, potentially bigger slices, hopefully manage well. Okay, aim number two, low unemployment. I think we all get the downside of unemployment, but the notes break it down into types. Frictional, structural, cyclical. Why the different labels?
Well, understanding the type helps figure out the cause and therefore the kind of best solution. Frictional is pretty natural. It's just people moving between jobs, grads looking for their first one. It's usually short term.
Okay, like job searching time.
Exactly. Structural is trickier. That's when there's a mismatch. The skills people have don't line up with the skills employers need. Think about like automation changing manufacturing jobs.
Right, a deeper issue. And cyclical.
Cyclical is tied directly to the economic cycle, the booms and busts. So in a recession, demand drops, businesses cut back, and unfortunately people lose jobs. That's cyclical unemployment.
So temporary transitions, skills gaps, and downturns. Got it. The notes also say full employment isn't actually zero unemployment. That sounds a bit weird, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But aiming for absolutely zero isn't realistic, or maybe even desirable. You'll always have some frictional unemployment, people changing roles, and some people might just choose not to work for a bit.
Okay.
So full employment really means getting rid of or minimizing that cyclical unemployment. It means the economy is running close to its potential, and most people who want a job can find one reasonably quickly.
Yeah, that clarifies things. Moving on. Price stability. Basically keeping inflation under control. We've all felt prices go up. What exactly is inflation, and why do they often aim for around, like, 2%, not zero?
So inflation is a sustained increase in the general price level. That's the key sustained. Your money gradually buys less.
Right.
That 2% target is interesting. Why not zero? Well, partly measurement issues. It's hard to perfectly capture all price changes. So a small positive target gives some buffer against accidentally causing deflation, which is falling prices. And that can be really bad, too. Plus, a little bit of low, stable inflation can kind of grease the wheels of the economy. It gives businesses a bit of flexibility on pricing, maybe makes it slightly easier for real wages to adjust without needing actual pay cuts, which people really dislike.
So a tiny bit might be okay, maybe even helpful, but runaway inflation is the big worry. Why is controlling it so important for us?
Oh, definitely. High or unpredictable inflation just breeds uncertainty. It makes it super hard to plan for the future, right? Like saving or investing becomes a gamble because you don't know what your money will be worth.
Yeah, erodes savings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for the country, if our prices rise too fast, our goods become less competitive internationally. It hurts exports. And in really bad cases, you get panic buying, shortages.
Yeah.
It gets disruptive fast.
Definitely want to avoid that. Okay, next one. Balance of payments stability. Sounds a bit more technical. BOP. What is that in plain English? And why does stability matter?
Think of the BOP as the UK's or any country's sort of financial statement with the rest of the world for a year. It tracks all the money flowing in and out.
Okay.
The notes mention the main bits. The current account that's mostly trade in goods and services. So us selling cars abroad or buying electronics from overseas. Then there's the capital account and the financial account, which track asset ownership changes and investments.
So it's like tracking all our international transactions. What's stability mean here? Does it have to balance perfectly?
Not necessarily day to day or even year to year. Stability here means avoiding large, persistent imbalances. Like if a country consistently runs a huge current account deficit, buying way more imports than it sells exports, it has to borrow from abroad to pay for it, building up debt.
Right, living beyond its means internationally.
Kind of, yeah. But conversely, a massive ongoing surplus isn't always great either. It might mean the country isn't consuming or investing enough at home. So the aim is more about a sustainable balance over the long haul.
Okay, avoid extremes. Got it. Next up, redistribution of income. We kind of know what that means, but why is it listed as a core macroeconomic aim?
Well, there's obviously a fairness or ethical argument, reducing poverty and inequality, but there are economic reasons too. Really high inequality can actually lead to social instability, maybe even unrest, which is bad for business and growth.
I see.
Plus, ensuring people have access to basics like healthcare and education through redistribution can lead to a healthier, more skilled workforce overall, which boosts the economy's potential in the long run.
So it's not just about ethics, it's also about like social cohesion and building up human capital for the whole economy. How do governments actually do this? The notes mention tools.
Yeah, the main ones are things like progressive taxation, where higher earners pay a bigger percentage of their income in tax.
Right.
And that money can fund welfare programs, unemployment benefits, housing support, things that provide a safety net. And also providing public services like state schools or the NHS, either free or heavily subsidized, helps ensure access regardless of income.
Okay, tax and spend, essentially, targeted to reduce inequality. Right, we've covered the goals. Now the notes shift gears a bit to aggregate demand and aggregate supply, AD and AS. This feels like the engine room stuff. Why do we need these concepts?
Because they're basically the big forces that determine the overall level of economic activity, like output, jobs, and prices. Understanding AD and AS helps us see how government policies might try to influence the economy to hit those aims we just talked about.
Okay, so they explain the how. Let's start with aggregate demand, AD.
Right. AD is just the total demand for everything, all goods and services in the whole economy at a particular price level.
Mm-hmm.
The notes give the equation. AD plus I plus G plus XM.
CIGXM, consumption.
Yeah. C is consumer spending, households buying stuff. I is investment spending by businesses.
Okay.
G is government spending on public services, infrastructure, etc. And XM is net exports, the value of exports minus the value of imports.
So total spending from everyone. Consumers, businesses, government, and foreigners buying our stuff minus what we spend on their stuff. What makes AD go up or down?
Lots of things can shift it. Lower interest rates, for example, make borrowing cheaper. So consumers and firms might spend and invest more. That shifts AD right, more demand.
More confidence, too.
Absolutely. If people and businesses feel optimistic, they spend more. Shifts AD right, government stimulus, tax cuts, spending projects directly boosts G or C, shifting AD right. Stronger exports, maybe from a weaker currency, making our goods cheaper abroad. That boosts XM and shifts AD right.
And the opposite shifts it left, less demand.
Exactly. Higher interest rates, higher taxes, economic uncertainty making everyone cautious, a global slowdown hitting exports. Those things tend to reduce overall spending and shift AD left.
Got it. So AD is the demand side. What about aggregate supply, AS, the ability to produce?
Precisely. AS is the total quantity of goods and services that all the firms in the economy are willing and able to supply at a given price level. The notes break this down too, into short run and long run.
SRS and LRAS. What's the difference there?
Short run aggregate supply, SRS, is mostly about production costs in the, well, short run. Things like wage rates, prices of oil or other raw materials, import costs affected by exchange rates, maybe regulations. If these costs go up, firms might supply less at any given price, shifting SRAs left. If costs fall, they might supply more, shifting it right.
So SRS is sensitive to immediate costs. What determines the long-run aggregate supply, LRAS?
LRAS is about the economy's fundamental productive potential.
Mm.
It's determined by the big underlying factors.
Mm.
The level of technology, the skills and education of the workforce, human capital, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Also the quality of infrastructure, roads, internet, power, and the amount of capital investment, like machinery and factories. These things determine how much the economy can sustainably produce when resources are fully used. It's often shown as a vertical line on graphs, meaning it's not directly affected by the price level in the long run.
Okay, so AD is demand, AS is supply, short run influenced by costs, long run by fundamental capacity. Now, the tricky part, policy conflicts. The notes really stress that hitting all those aims, growth, low unemployment, stable prices, etc., at the same time is hard. Why?
Yeah, this is where economics gets really complex, isn't it? It's because the policies you use to chase one goal often mess up another one.
Like a seesaw?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
The classic trade-off is inflation versus unemployment, often called the Phillips curve relationship, though it's debated. If the government boosts AD to lower unemployment.
By cutting interest rates, say.
Right. That extra demand can push prices up, leading to inflation. But if they try to squash inflation by raising interest rates,
yeah,
that can slow down spending and investment, potentially increasing unemployment.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't sometimes. The notes mention other conflicts, too. Growth versus balance of payments. Equality versus growth.
Yeah, those come up, too. You stimulate really fast growth. People and businesses often buy more imports, right? Which can worsen the current account deficit,
right,
the balance of payments thing. And the equality versus growth one. Well, some argue that significant redistribution, high taxes on earners, generous benefits might reduce incentives to work hard or invest, potentially slowing overall growth.
But others might argue the opposite, that less inequality is better for long-term growth.
Exactly. It's a really contentious area. Reducing poverty could boost overall demand and productivity. There's no easy answer. And different economists, different political viewpoints, will emphasize different sides of that argument.
These are tough choices. And the notes mention Tinbergen's rule. What's that about?
Tinbergen's rule is a sort of principle in policymaking. It basically says that if you have N independent policy goals you want to achieve.
Like low inflation, low unemployment, etc. Five goals, say.
Right. Then ideally you need at least independent policy instruments or tools to reliably hit all those goals. So five goals, you'd ideally want five different levers you can pull independently. Because often, one tool like just changing interest rates affects multiple goals at once, sometimes in conflicting ways. So having more distinct tools gives you more flexibility to target specific problems without causing unwanted side effects elsewhere. It highlights the complexity you often don't have enough independent tools.
So no single magic wand. Which brings us to the end bit, setting priorities. Given these conflicts, how do governments choose what to focus on?
It's a real mix of things. The notes point to the severity of the problem. If inflation is soaring at 10%, that's probably going to jump to the top of the priority list, even if tackling it slows growth for a bit.
Makes sense. Address the biggest fire first.
Right. Public opinion matters hugely, too. What are people most worried about? Jobs, cost of living. Governments often respond to that pressure.
And timing. Short-term pain for long-term gain.
That's always a factor, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, political cycles and ideologies play a big role in what gets prioritized and how.
So it's fluid depending on the situation, public mood, politics. The notes gave examples.
Yeah, like in a deep recession with high unemployment, the focus will almost certainly be on boosting growth and jobs,
mm-hmm,
maybe using fiscal stimulus or cutting rates, even if there's a slight risk of inflation down the line.
Okay.
But if the economy is overheating and inflation is the main problem, then the priority shifts. You'll likely see interest rate hikes or maybe spending cuts to cool things down, even if that means slower growth for a while.
Wow, okay. That really puts it all together. This has been super helpful. A proper deep dive into those main macroeconomic aims. We've looked at growth, unemployment, inflation, the balance of payments, income redistribution.
Mm-hmm. And also the key mechanics, AD and AS, that help explain how it all fits together or sometimes doesn't fit together easily.
Exactly. Those conflicts and trade-offs are crucial to understand. It's clear that managing an economy is this constant balancing act.
Absolutely. And hopefully understanding these concepts gives everyone listening a better framework for, you know, making sense of economic news, understanding why governments make certain choices, and how it all potentially impacts their own lives.
Definitely. Which leads us to our final thought for you, the listener. Thinking about all these competing aims we've discussed, growth versus inflation, jobs versus stable prices, equality versus efficiency, all those tensions, what do you think should be the number one priority for governments right now in today's economic climate?
Yeah, and thinking beyond just the priority, what might be the knock-on effects, the potential consequences, good and bad, of really focusing on that one main goal?
It's a complex puzzle, no easy answers, but hopefully understanding the pieces, these macroeconomic aims and trade-offs, helps you think it through. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.